Okay, our third case this morning, we will take a break after this one, is 19-2191 Dale versus Equine Sports Medicine. And for the appellant is Mr. Dunn. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Blair Dunn. I'm here on behalf of the appellants in this matter. I'd like to start by first acknowledging that I when you think about New Mexico policy on this case, I think what happened is we had the judge look at the policy and think about ways to limit it. And I think he did so mainly in reliance. He does reference this in his opinion on the conduct of myself and my partner in the Texas case after the mistrial. And that seems to have really given the judge some severe problems in this case. And I think that in doing so and in focusing on that, he missed what was clearly the established law in New Mexico when it comes to looking at our 37-1-14 statute, which is that it should be construed liberally and broadly, and instead he wanted to narrow it. Of course, there's also precedent that he didn't look at, which was the Foster case that we've cited to in our brief. And in that case, of course, Judge Vanzi from the New Mexico Court of Appeals stated very clearly the policy for New Mexico courts, which is to construe that as broadly as possible in order to allow to get to a case on the merits and a judgment on the merits.
Counsel, have you been the counsel on this case throughout, or are you just appointed to make the argument, or at what point did you switch? Or give us some background about your presence in the case.
Your Honor, I was one of the initiating attorneys along with my law partner at the time. I do joke and tell people that I'm going to write a short novel on this case when it's finally said and done about what a horror story it has kind of been procedurally and the quagmire and the twists and turns of this, as it were. But
let's talk about your horror story. You filed this lawsuit in Texas, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And then you filed a motion to change the venue to New Mexico when you could have filed it in New Mexico in the first place.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Once you got it before the court in Texas and got a ruling against you, then you took it to the Fifth Circuit, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And then after it was in the Fifth Circuit did what?
The Fifth Circuit reversed Judge McBride on the basis of his denial of the motion to dismiss and the reconsideration of the motion to dismiss.
And then what did you do?
Then we turned around and approximately a month later filed the case here in New Mexico.
The Texas case had already ended?
So the Fifth Circuit mandated a dismissal without prejudice from Judge McBride, and he did adhere to that and dismiss the case without prejudice at that point. And it was following that dismissal of the Texas case that we initiated the New Mexico case.
And then what happened then?
You were here once. Why didn't you come back rather than spin your wheels in the Fifth Circuit?
Well, Your Honor, we were, this is a procedural quagmire and it is a horror story. And so we filed, let me give some background. We filed the case, my plaintiffs were located in Missouri and in California. And at the time of the filing, we understood that all of the defendants were in the North District of Texas. They were all located there. The veterinarians were all practicing there. We thought that it made sense to avoid even arguing about a motion for non-convenient forum or whatever it might be, that we just go ahead and file in Texas upon a belief that that would be an adequate forum to litigate the case. We since decided that it didn't really work there, that it certainly didn't appear, and there's been a lot of discussion about forum shopping. That went back and forth. That was discussed in front of the Fifth, and that is certainly something that's there. But even if we had filed, if the judge had allowed us to dismiss the case at the time, this is the decision that was reversed by the Fifth, we could have then turned around and filed it back in New Mexico and suffered neither side suffered any amount of real legitimate prejudice. We weren't allowed to do so. We proceeded to litigate the case as best we could, given the limitations on the case. And that's a whole other issue that's really not before the court. We got to the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit agreed that it was an erroneous decision by Judge McBride and an abuse of his discretion not to have granted our dismissal. And they dismissed our case for us. And they demanded that it be dismissed without prejudice, which we did, which then opened it up for us to file. Now, the New Mexico, at that point,
why isn't that more akin to a failure to prosecute for purposes of the savings statute?
Well, the savings statute discusses negligent prosecution, and that goes to the point that we don't really try at prosecuting. It doesn't go to an incorrect prosecution. I think negligence implies that you're not paying attention, you're not pursuing it. We did very adamantly pursue this case. We've been all the way through the fifth, got it reversed. We've been very diligent, which I would say is the opposite of negligent. We've been very diligent in prosecuting this case. So it failed, but it didn't fail for a negligent reason. It failed for a variety of reasons, none of which were that we weren't diligent in pursuing the case. And there's a lot of discussion about what the word fail means in the briefing from both parties. And I think that that's really what this turns on and ultimately what the district court, where the district court went awry. If you're going to construe the New Mexico statute.
Well, I think you skipped a step talking about going awry. You actually went to trial in Texas, didn't you?
We did, Your Honor, and it was mistrialed on a point that we also felt was there, but wasn't ever addressed by the Fifth Circuit. It really wasn't necessary for the Fifth Circuit to even look at that, because they were looking at his earlier Judge McBride's earlier denial of the motion to dismiss and the motion for reconsideration after we agreed to pay the fees that were the condition proceeding to the dismissal that he had said we needed to meet.
Well, I thought he entered an order that you could have a change of venue if you agreed to pay the fees and attorney fees and you had declined to do so and proceeded to trial.
That's not correct.
All right, well, correct me.
He denied our motion to change venue. We filed a motion to dismiss under Rule 41. He denied the motion to dismiss and stated that we had failed to agree to pay all of the attorney's fees of the other side. We filed a motion to reconsider of that decision.
Well, just a second. You just told me that you did agree to pay the costs and attorney fees to the other side. Now you're saying the district court there in Texas found that you had not done so, which is correct.
Your Honor, I was about to explain that.
All right.
We never said we wouldn't pay the attorney's fees. He dismissed it in spite of the fact we had never said that. So we filed a motion to reconsider saying, fine, we'll pay all of the attorney's fees. And he denied that motion as well. And that's what the district or the Fifth Circuit looked at in this case. And they said, okay, well, in the first instance, the dismissal may have been inappropriate. But even assuming arguendo that it was appropriate and it was an abuse of discretion to deny the dismissal, when we came back the second time, it said, no, that's fine. We'll pay the attorney's fees. He should have granted that motion to reconsider then, too. They found that both of those decisions by him were an abuse of discretion and then kicked the case. And that's how we ended up here. So once that's happened and we've done everything, we've diligently pursued this, this ends up back in front of Judge Johnson. And Judge Johnson, instead of broadly conveying the statute, looks at it and finds a way to...
Let me ask you this question. What is the issue before us? It's whether the district is it that your claim is that the district court abused its discretion in denying you an equitable tolling of the statute of limitations? Is that your argument?
No, our argument is twofold, Your Honor. The first is that the district court misapplied the tolling statute in New Mexico, the 37-1-14, which says that if a case fails for any reason except negligent prosecution, that there's a 6-month tolling statute.
All right. So you're not relying on the good faith and equity of the court below, and you're not asserting to us that that there is a denial of equitable relief.
We are asserting that there's a denial of equitable relief. That's right, the second part of our argument.
Hold on, not so quick, because I feel like I'm getting flim-flammed here, and maybe it's me, not you. But if you are asserting that the district court below denied you the equitable relief of tolling, what is our standard of review of that matter? Abuse of discretion?
No, Your Honor, these are both matters of law.
What's our standard of review?
They're both de novo. They're both matters of law.
We don't review the denial of equitable relief by a trial court de novo and assert our opinion in place of that of the district court, do we? Is that the law? Give me the case.
In the instance of
reviewed an abuse of discretion for the denial of an equitable tolling as a matter of de novo. What's the case?
Your Honor, as we cited for statute of limitations.
Don't tell me whether you cited it or not. Just tell me what it is. Makes me feel bad if you cited it and I didn't catch it.
Tiberia versus Cigna Corp.
Your what?
Honor? Tiberia versus Cigna Corp.
All right. And it holds what?
That the Federal Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit reviews summary judgment on statute of limitation grounds de novo.
All right. So you're talking here about the denial of summary judgment based on a request that the court apply equitable tolling. Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, the
procedural posture of the case is here.
Your Honor, the district court dismissed the case on the statute of limitations. It did so in denying our claim in our briefing that whether we were entitled to the equitable tolling statute or we were denied the equity of the court under equitable tolling principles, that the statute of limitations should have been tolled. He didn't buy either of those and denied us both avenues of relief.
Did you raise equitable tolling in district court?
We did raise the equitable tolling in district court, yes, sir. We raised both the statute and the equitable tolling cases, and we pointed out that the Fifth Circuit itself had mentioned when they were discussing the case at argument that if something went awry here, and they granted what had gone awry here, and they granted our reversal of Judge McBride's decision that... And I forget the judge's name off the top of my head, but said, wouldn't it make sense that there is going to be some sort of equitable tolling?
So in other words, if one of the three of us in framing a question makes a declarative statement, then that could be used in a future case to say that a majority of the 10th Circuit has said X. Help me out with this reliance on one of the Fifth Circuit judges hypothesized an argument.
Your Honor, I just pointed out as persuasive argument from the court itself, a persuasive acknowledgement from the court, rather. It's not binding in any sort of fashion. We've never argued that it is, but it should have been somewhat persuasive to Judge Johnson. And I believe it should be persuasive perhaps to this court that one of the other circuits has looked at this and said, well, this likely seems to apply. It's, of course, this court's job to actually apply to see whether or not that actually applies in this instance. And that's why we're here today.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Could you address the New Mexico Supreme Court case of King, which seems to suggest that a dismissal without prejudice would be the functional equivalent of the case not having been filed? Can you distinguish that for me?
I can, Your Honor. And I do think that the part of the distinguishment centers around and is discussed in the later decision of the Foster case that we cited to. I think that the distinguishment is that how this case was dismissed is more akin to a federal court, for instance, dismissing for a lack of subject matter jurisdiction, which is what's discussed in our cited portion of the Foster case, whereas a dismissal for some other type of reason. We didn't just withdraw the case. We actually asked for a motion and the attempted to go through Rule 41. That would still, I think, in this instance, invoke that 6-month statute of limitations. Tolling, sorry.
Mr. Dunn, can I ask you a question just factually, because I was a little confused about it. Is the case number 16CV953KBMKK, was that a third lawsuit?
Your Honor, so in the midst of trying to sort out whether or not Judge McBride was going to allow us to leave Texas and or to dismiss our case, we did file a placeholder case in New Mexico. That case never went anywhere. It was never served. It just sat as a placeholder, believing that we were, since we had filed for a dismissal and then we had agreed to pay the attorney's fees on the reconsideration, that we were going to be allowed to proceed with the case in New Mexico.
I have a follow-up question, but I don't want to eat up your rebuttal time. If I ask a question without eating up his rebuttal time?
Well, if you have a question, ask it.
So, the action was commenced, correct? I mean, Rule 3 in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure says that the filing of an act, the filing of a complaint commences the action. Right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so this the suit that we're quarreling about in New Mexico was actually the third suit, correct? The third suit that had been commenced.
Yes, Your Honor.
And New Mexico statute 37.114 that we're talking about says, if after the commencement of an action, the plaintiff fails therein for any cause except negligence prosecution. So you're arguing that that's predicated, that's satisfied, and a new suit be commenced within 6 months thereafter, the second suit shall, for the purposes herein contemplated, be deemed a continuation of the first. The statute only contemplates the second action would trigger the saving statute. Right? And that's, in fact, what every case that I have found in Oklahoma, New Mexico, everywhere, Iowa, all of them uniformly say, based on, and I think the clarity of the statute is, you only get to do this, the saving statute, one time. You can't do it on the third suit. So why shouldn't we affirm on alternative grounds, even though this has not been raised?
Well, Your Honor, the second case that was filed in New Mexico, preceding, of course, the dismissal from the Texas case, we weren't in any position where we could prosecute that action in two jurisdictions. It really couldn't have proceeded. It's not really a case, even though it was commenced. We had already had an action open in Texas. We filed that to preserve any potential arguments.
I understand that.
So, and if that's true, Your Honor, if we're going to apply that statute, we're going to say that it doesn't apply to a third filing. The bottom line is that we were still barred by extraordinary circumstances, and that's where equitable tolling, we're arguing, kicks in. Is that if that is true and the statute doesn't apply, we couldn't have proceeded with any of these actions until we were finally released from Texas by the Fifth Circuit reversal of Judgment Bride's order. And that's a period of about 700 days if you look at what equitable tolling applies to give us to file the new case when we're finally released from the state of Texas.
Okay, counsel, I think your time's expired. Let's hear from Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court and counsel. And I just want to go to that point that was made last first, that under equitable tolling, requires a showing of some extraordinary circumstances standing in the way of filing the action. And in this case, as the court observed, there was an action filed in the District of New Mexico in that intervening time in which the appellants are now arguing that there was some extraordinary circumstance that prevented them from filing. So clearly, there was nothing that prevented them from filing a lawsuit in the District of New Mexico if that's where they wanted to be. And I understand that you can't have two pending at the same time. And they went through the Fifth Circuit. It turns out the Fifth Circuit opinion came down days after the statute of limitations would have expired here. If you're concerned about your statute of limitations, and in calling that second lawsuit that was filed a placeholder action, I gather means that we filed it in order to protect our statute of limitations. You file it again, you know, before the statute ultimately runs on September 2nd, 2018, and that wasn't done. So I think there is no argument for equitable tolling, and I think to the point about the standard of review, that because this is a summary judgment on appeal, that it is true that it's a de novo review of the ruling on summary judgment. I think it's probably accurate that and I apologize that we didn't brief it this way, but I think it's probably accurate, as the court surmised, that when there's a request for equitable relief, which equitable tolling clearly is, that that there is some deference, it's abuse of discretion as to the finding of fact, as to whether the factual showings needed for equitable tolling had been made, and and the district court found that they had not. And then that leaves the statutory tolling. And the statute is brief, but as I think the court noted, if you look around all of the similar statutes around the country, that they tend to deal with failure for want of jurisdiction. And as I guess the Foster case probably deals with, that the tolling applies where that failure was not the fault of the plaintiff, or at least arguably not the fault, wasn't the result of negligence or intent, that you know, that they believe they had jurisdiction and jurisdiction failed. And then what the cases say, and what I understand King to say, is that where there has been no failure, where there's a dismissal for whether it's one or prosecution, but a dismissal without prejudice, there's been no failure of the underlying suit, in which case the statute just does not apply. And I think that's the situation we're in here, where the statute just does not apply. Granted, there was a substantial and acrimonious procedurally convoluted intervening case filed in the Northern District of Texas. But the end result of that was that it was dismissed without prejudice, after, you know, a trial that the plaintiffs, if you look at the record, appeared to intend to cause a mistrial and then refused to appear for the retrial. That's what led to the judgment and the appeal. The circuit said it should have been granted, the dismissal without prejudice should have been granted early on. And that was the end result. And so ultimately that case was dismissed without prejudice because the plaintiffs asked for it.
That's, you know, such a, you know, a house of mirrors. Why wouldn't that be an exceptional circumstance for purposes of equitable tolling, a reversal for an abuse of discretion? I mean, that never happens.
I guess you could call that case extraordinary. And if you're at all familiar with Fifth Circuit jurisprudence, Judge McBride is kind of extraordinary. But be that as it may, there was nothing that prevented the plaintiffs from filing the action in the District of Mexico. And they did so in the fall of 2017 and dismissed it in 2018, again, without prejudice. And in fact, this raises another issue. It was never ruled upon by the district court, but there really have been two dismissals, one by notice under Rule 41 by the plaintiffs. And, you know, hopefully we don't have to have that ruled upon if we, you know, but they did file the intervening case. So clearly there wasn't any extraordinary circumstance that prevented the filing of that. They did it once. They certainly could have done it again before September 2nd, 2018.
Do you think that the saving statute applies based on the statutory reference to the second suit? Is this the second suit or the third suit?
This is the third. This is the third. And that was an interesting point that I had not thought of, that the way the statute is couched in similar statutes around the country, it applies to a second suit. And if it applied at all, then logically it would not apply to the third suit. It's my contention it doesn't apply at all, because the suit filed in the Northern District of Texas did not fail. It proceeded, in fact, to a judgment that was reversed and found that it should have been dismissed without prejudice. But that's not a failure. The jurisdiction, it didn't fail for jurisdictional reasons. There wasn't some failure to you know, include necessary parties or something like that. It proceeded to a judgment and was reversed. It was, you know, that doesn't trigger the statute, I don't believe.
Well, if Judge Timkovich is right, and the dismissal, and he's right by virtue ex cathedra, he's right. But assuming he's right, then the first case was dismissal without prejudice. It doesn't count. The second case was dismissal without prejudice. It doesn't count. So this is the first case.
Well, in that case, the statute simply ran. The statute of limitations simply ran. And I think that's the situation we're in.
Thank you.
Well, if you're, right about that, the savings statute, we go back to that. It, for it not to apply requires a failure to prosecute. And what you've lined out is pretty aggressive prosecution by the Dale to no avail, but it's not like they were sitting on their rights in Texas.
Yeah, if you look at not only King, but the other cases under the tolling statute, it's that a dismissal for dismissal without prejudice means that the statute just doesn't apply, that there is no tolling effect there. I think the reasoning is it doesn't have to be that it was negligent, and it doesn't even have to be that for anything other than that if it was dismissed without prejudice, it is as if no suit was ever filed. And it puts the parties back to their position ex ante. And in this case,
it wasn't dealing with a voluntary dismissal, was it?
I'm trying to remember exactly what the dismissal in King was about, actually. But I believe you're correct. But it's not so much, I'm trying to remember. I know I saw some cases in preparing for this argument that relying on King that just say that a dismissal without prejudice is, doesn't trigger the statute. And I think that's the
in the case that was filed in New Mexico, who were the defendants
in this case or the
in the so-called second case that was filed in New Mexico? Who were has since been dismissed?
I believe it was the same defendants.
And what is the residence of those same defendants for the venue purposes in New Mexico?
Yeah, currently.
I'm not saying currently.
Okay.
I'm talking about the second case.
Yeah, at that time.
Who were the defendants and what was their residence?
Yeah, it was the same defendants as now, which is Equine Medicine and Dr. Now you have me at a loss. I haven't thought of the name of the case in a while, but and an individual veterinarian who at the time, it's Dr. Boyd. I'm sorry, Dr. Boyd and Equine Sports Medicine, and Equine Sports Medicine and all of its veterinarians are based in Texas. And it was more than just Dr. Boyd from Equine Sports Medicine who saw this horse during the summer of 2014. Primarily Dr. Boyd, but there were some others, and they're all based in Texas. Dr. Boyd had a residence in Texas. He also spent a fair amount of time in New Mexico during racing season at various, homes.
But his residence was.
I suspect that for venue purposes, I mean, and we certainly made the argument, or I wasn't here then, but this firm made the argument in the Texas case that his residence for venue purposes was in the state of Texas. And that would have still been true. That would have been the position that the defendants took had the second case gone forward.
So venue would have been in facially, it appears that venue would have been in Texas.
Well, venue would have been proper in either state. The issue is convenience of the parties, but because all of the actions giving rise to the cause of action took place in New Mexico and that had all been completed by September 2nd, then the case could have initially been filed in New Mexico. It's always been a mystery to me as to why it was not. And if you want to look for negligent prosecution of the case, that might be it. And frankly, Your Honors, that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any other questions the court may have, but otherwise I'll turn it over to counsel.
All right, counsel, we appreciate that. I think we understand your arguments and the case shall be submitted. Counsel is excused. We'll take a 15-minute break, so that would be reconvene at 10:50.
Thank you, Your Honor.